Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
How old were you when the alien encounters first started?
4 or 5 years old. I was really young. I got really scared when I had a bad encounter and I saw it like carry my sister down the hallway.
And did any part of you desire to intervene, like thinking that your sister was in danger and you needed to do something?
I was terrified because not all of them were friendly. Some were scary. Hello?
Carl?
Hey, Gek, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Carl. How are you?
Doing awesome. Awesome.
Carl, says here you're 24 years old from Florida and that you were abducted by aliens as a child.
Yeah, it was a little odd. It was more like they came to visit my room.
Why do you think they came to visit your room?
I don't know, man. Like, when I was younger, I had, like, really bad nightmares. And one of the things that would happen is, like, I would see stuff floating in my room. And so one time, like, really late at night, and, man, I was terrified of sleeping with the lights not being on. Like, if the lights weren't on, I'd freak out. But I would see, like, this little, like, 2.5-foot-tall dude in, like, sparkling black pajamas, like dancing and moonwalking with me. And like, that was the only time like I wasn't really afraid of the encounters, but there was a few times where it like got super, like super scary, bro. Like there was one time, like when I was like, I would say 6, I was sitting there watching TV in the dark, just sitting there watching cartoons. Cause you know, back in the day, you know, TVs were a lot different. You didn't have them everywhere like now.
Well, so hold on. So hold on. Hold on. Back up first for a second, Carl. How old were you when the alien encounters first started?
I would say about 4 or 5 years old. I was real young.
Okay. About 4 or 5 years old. And tell me about the very first one. Was it as you, because you're painting sort of two separate pictures. One where the aliens are dancing with you and they come in peace and they're your friend, and then one where they are hostile to you. And in what form did they come the very first time?
It would be both at the same time because they would have different shapes. There'd probably be about 2 or 3 different types, you know? Like sometimes it'd just be like floating orbs, and then sometimes it'd be actual, like they take on a human form, but they would look like a shadow, if that makes sense. A sparkly shadow just walking around my room.
Did they talk to you at all? Did they say anything?
No, but I would see them pick up. Like there was one time I got really scared when I had a bad encounter and I saw it like carry my sister down the hallway. And my sister didn't wake up. That was the crazy part. And then
so
put her back in the bed.
So you saw him carry your sister down the hallway. And did any part of you desire to intervene, like thinking that your sister was in danger and you needed to do something?
I was terrified because not all of them were friendly. Some were scary.
And tell me more about the ones that were friendly.
So the friendly ones would, I guess when they figured out that I was too traumatized, the friendly one would come down and just like dance And like no one else would hear this, but I'd like hear like this little like do 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 and the like music, and the thing would dance and like moonwalk. It was crazy. And he was like a little midget thing. He wasn't like tall. He was like maybe 3 feet tall. And that was it. He just looked like a sparkly shadow.
The hostile aliens, the ones that you got bad vibes from, were they short as well, or were they a different size?
They would have extremely exaggerated arms or legs. And they would almost look like Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy. Like watching TV one night, I saw a Groot-like arm probably about 6 to 8 feet long reach up from under the bed and try to grab me.
And you said it tried to grab you.
Yes.
Was there any other instances of the aliens trying to touch you or like fuck with you in any way?
The grabbing was probably towards the end because they knew I wasn't being receptive. And so when they grabbed me, I just started screaming, and my family came in the room, and that was it. I mean, my family was not happy about me, convinced that I was seeing this stuff because, you know, they didn't see it. They didn't encounter it. And I don't know if it put them in a trance. I don't know if it blacked them out. I don't know. And so, whenever like it hit the point that I'd freak out, man, my dad would get really, really upset with me and be abusive over it to the point, because they were terrified. I mean, they were just frustrated. They're like, you got this little 5-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid waking us up at all hours of the night screaming. It was almost like an episode of Poltergeist.
You said they would be abusive?
I mean, like, go to bed now, you know? And they'd get mad at me because I couldn't sleep without the lights on. Yeah.
How many times did this happen, these alien encounters?
I would say probably over the course of about 3 years.
Okay, so over the course of about 3 years, and how many instances in those 3 years?
I would say about maybe twice a week, 2 to 3 times a week.
2 to 3 times a week?
Yeah. They'd come down and visit. I don't know. Yeah.
So this is not just like a couple times thing. This happened a lot.
Right.
Okay. Right. And did it always happen on certain days, or was it just random?
It was random. I remember being so afraid of waking my parents up. I'd hide in the closet or in different parts of the house to get away from them.
So I imagine that over the course of these 3 years, like, if you were getting visited by aliens twice a week, imagine that during your waking hours, you're afraid to go to bed.
Yeah.
Like, every night.
Absolutely. I was afraid of the dark. Completely.
Okay. And you tell your parents about this, and they just get pissed off and frustrated with you, and they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you tell your sister about this?
Yeah. And I mean, it was one of the situations where we talked about it, but she didn't reciprocate. It was just, I was weird, if that makes sense. And she just didn't want to talk about it.
And you kind of were telling me about, like, there's the friendly aliens and there's the hostile ones. And
yes,
how often, I mean, this is happening, this must have happened to you like at least 100 times. How often were the aliens friendly versus hostile? Like, if you had to give me a percentage.
90% of the time hostile.
Okay.
Or maybe a language barrier. And I just perceived it as being hostile.
Interesting. So you believe that there's a chance that they weren't being hostile, that they were just communicating to you with actually pure intentions, but because of a language barrier, you interpreted it as hostile?
Maybe about 40% of the hostile encounters. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
So it happened for... All right, so you're 24 years old. When did this stop happening?
Yeah. I would say when I was about 9 or 10.
Okay. And it says here that it hasn't happened recently because you think they don't like you anymore. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. I got family that are devout Christians, and they prayed against it. And when they prayed, they just left.
Interesting. So you think that your family praying against it is keeping them away?
Happily, so I would say yes.
Are you a Christian?
Yes.
Do you pray them away?
Yeah. The scary ones, yes.
So can I ask, has anything like supernatural kind of happened to you? I mean, it's been about like 14 years. Has anything kind of supernatural happened to you in those past 14 years aside from just this alien thing?
No. Just, it was like it was completely unplugged and stopped at age 9, 10.
And it happened right when you started praying?
Yes.
Do you pray every day?
Yeah. Yeah.
And every day that you pray for the past 14 years, do you think about these creatures?
When I was younger, yes. Yeah, because it was a traumatic thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about when you pray nowadays?
Man, just life direction, man. Okay. That's the biggest thing. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Have you ever talked about these aliens with like an actual psychiatrist or therapist?
My mom, when I was real young, took me to someone, and she told him that she was praying against when I got older, actually probably about 9, and that stopped them. And when they told her that, the psychologist basically said, you shouldn't have done that. And that you're just feeding into the illusions.
Mm. Okay. So the psychologist told your mom that she shouldn't feed into your delusions.
Pretty much.
Okay. So do you... Oh, so and this was when you were 9.
Yes.
Okay, so you're 24 years old. You're an adult now. Have you made any effort, like, you know, independently to talk to a psychiatrist about this?
Other instances, but no, not this, because honestly, I blacked a lot of it out.
Yeah.
It was so traumatic when I was young.
Interesting. Well, I mean, okay, so tell me this then. Tell me this then. How do you feel, like, in this very moment, talking to me and all these other people listening about it?
I wanted to talk in a way that it would be an open-minded setting, and I feel like you're open-minded.
Sure. So it feels, so you don't feel like, because I want to kind of get to why you don't feel like you can talk to a psychiatrist about this. Like, is it a, Like, is there like a fear against doing that?
They're expensive.
They are fucking expensive. That's true. That is very true.
Not everyone can talk to a tech guy.
That is true.
You know? Yeah. $40 to $60 an hour.
Yeah, that is true. I just run into this thing where it's hard because I always tell people at, you know, obviously I'm not even a fake therapist. I'm a guy in a gecko costume talking to people, but I always tell people they should go talk to an actual therapist if they're trying to talk to me about something that I've talked to an actual therapist about. And then I always, you know, they're like, therapists are expensive, and I'm like, that's true.
I would look into whatever,
you know, listen, I want to keep talking about this, but just as an aside, I would look into whatever resources, are available for you, to talk to a real therapist. I guess all of that aside, is this something that, like, contemporarily, you know, as a 24-year-old, as you sort of go about your day-to-day life, is this something that still, like, affects you?
Maybe out of fear. Maybe I have some fear that I deal with.
Okay.
You know, dealing with being assertive and making decisions to do stuff.
Mm.
You know, because you're afraid you're going to make the wrong decision, you know, and that it would make a mistake. You know,
how do these aliens and these encounters, how have they influenced your feelings about decision making?
I think making the wrong decisions or the wrong moves or making something angry, you know, that's the biggest thing. You don't want to encounter, I don't want to say wrath of the alien, you know, that's probably the wrong thing to say.
I mean, is that it? Are you, like, afraid that if you make the wrong decision that, like, they'll come back?
I don't know. It's just, you know, like, you know, when you're 5 and 6 years old and your parents are yelling at you to go to bed, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you go to your mom and dad for protection and say, hey, mom, you know, I'm scared. And then all of a sudden it's like, go to bed now. I got to be at the factory at 6 a.m., you know? I'm sorry, I'm talking quietly. I'm not sure the rest of the house.
Yeah. Yeah, no, dude, I totally can see that, right? Because you're fucking 6, and whether or not whether or not it actually happened, you believe that fucking aliens are coming to fucking attack you. You're 6, you don't have any, you really kind of don't have any tools when you're 6 years old to deal with anything except for your parents. And so you go to your parents. Mm-hmm. And they fucking become, like, an extra source of hostility toward you. And, like, that fucking sucks. I can see why that would have an effect on someone, for sure. And I'm sorry that happened to you. I feel like you deserve better. You seem like a sweet guy. You don't seem like you deserve anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What made me want to ask was, I was a friend of my family sent me a link about Fran being abducted, and I was kind of like hoping that this would open up dialogue into that and give me some like answers that, you know, I'm not alone. There's other people that have dealt with this, you know,
Fran.
But there's shame. Yeah, like Fran Drescher.
All right. Well, hold on. Fran was abducted by, like, assailants. Not, I don't think she was abducted by aliens.
It's on the Today Show.
Really? Did she talk about being abducted by aliens? You know more about her than I do, probably.
Yeah, Google it. It's true.
Well, look, I can put a word in. I'll see if I know she was abducted, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't by aliens. I'm pretty sure it was by, like,
no.
You know, assailants.
She talked about her hand. Her hand.
Huh.
Being, like, a transmitter. You can Google it.
I'll tell you this much. You're definitely not alone in, you know, people reporting encounters with aliens and whatnot. I'm not going to throw my, you know, hat in the ring as to, you know, my opinions on whether or not any of that stuff is real, because I, you know, who the fuck am I to determine reality? But, man, look, at the end of the day, I will say, you know, I do hope that you find the, I know it's tough for people out there to find, like, actual help, but I do hope that you can find you know, a licensed person to kind of talk through this shit with that can help you make better sense of it. You totally didn't deserve for your parents to, like, fucking yell at you when you were in that position.
Yeah.
And, man, I appreciate you sharing this stuff. This is interesting. I feel like there's got to be somebody listening who's had a similar experience as you with these aliens.
Thank you.
Maybe will reach out. Is there anything else that you want to say about the whole thing or about anything in general before we go?
The group hand when I was younger scared me. Like, that was probably the most traumatic, because, like, you know, you're sitting there watching TV and you see, like, a 9-foot arm come out and try to grab you out of the bed. You know, that was probably the scary. But see, like, 99% of the time they're scary. But there was that 1%, that 10% of the time where, like, I guess they would try to make me laugh.
They're playing good. They're playing good alien, bad alien on you.
Maybe. Like that was the weird one. Like, when you see, like, a 2.5-foot tall, dark shadow, sparkly, and at first you're scared, but you realize the dude's dancing, and you're hearing, like, music. You know.
I wonder if there's, like, I wonder if there's, like, and this will probably be the last thing I have to say about this. It's totally uninformed, but I wonder if there's, like, a, you know how people have, like, lucid dreams where, like, they can kind of awaken themselves to determine the reality of, you know, whatever, the dream reality of what's going on. Like, is there a version of that when you're in these encounters where you can sort of take control of the situation and perceive the aliens to be helpful, you know? Like, you can kind of take control over whether or not they're helpful or hostile?
Maybe. They were more like ghosts, because there's one point where, like, I got bold enough to just run through them, if that makes sense. So, but I was 100% aware. Like, I wasn't asleep or coming out of a dream state, if that makes sense.
Carl, is there anything else that you would like to say before we go?
No, sir. Thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you for calling, Carl. Appreciate you.
Yep, appreciate you. Bye.
Oh, man. You know what's interesting is everybody listening to that, like, had their own, like, imagination in their head of what Carl's aliens looked like. And now I'm thinking about what everyone's different imagination of the aliens looked like. Mine, they looked like little outlines of creatures that had, like, stars in them or some shit. And they're kind of dancing around. Man, I fucking feel for Carl, because I want him to be able to talk about all that shit with, like, an actual psychiatrist. And this happens so often on this podcast where someone will come to something, and of course I'll be like, hey, you know, you should probably talk about that with a real therapist. And then I'm like, man, I wish I could sit in the room while he's talking about that with an actual psychiatrist and, like, actually, like, get their take on what's going on, because I have obviously no idea, but I do wonder what they would have to say about what's going on with Carl, you know, if it is some form of a delusion if it is some sort of masking of a traumatic event that that's not even, you know, being brought up. Or if it's fucking aliens. What if he goes to see a therapist and they're like, yeah, that's aliens. Aliens exist. And they did try to abduct you. And that means that you're the chosen person. And that I have to give you $1 million. That could be what happens. I have no idea. I have no semblance of the thing. But that's spooky. I felt bad for him, too, when he was talking about how his parents were just being jerks about it. Because really, when you're six, you have nothing. You know, I mean, he's 24 now. And you can kind of, if you're 24 and you get abducted by aliens, you can kind of be like, oh, well, that was weird that I thought about that. When you're six, you have when you're six, you accept everything that happens to you at face value. So if you are fucking getting abducted by aliens and you're six, you're not much of a skeptic when you're six. You're still believing in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and shit. So you have every right to take everything that happens to you at face value. And so the fear that you feel when that happens to you, it's real. It's like, oh, I'm fucking getting abducted by aliens. Like, you're really feeling that. And you go to your parents, who are supposed to be the only people in your life who can really count on for anything. And then they respond to you with more fear. But it's not your fucking fault, because you're six. You're six. You're nothing. None of your actions are propelled by anything except for whatever emotion you're feeling at that time. And whatever emotion you're feeling at that time, you're not even in control of, because you're six. Fucking Carl. I feel for him. I hope he gets whatever help he needs. Carl.
Hey folks, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is a convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online option for therapy. With video, voice, and texting chat options with a licensed therapist that can be done completely at your own pace and on your own schedule. You don't need to leave your house. You don't need to sit in traffic. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with one of several therapists on the platform. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge until you find one that works for you, and you can communicate with your therapist as often as you want and whenever you feel it's needed. It's never a bad idea to find someone qualified to talk to about your issues and get some guidance on them. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/gecko today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/gecko.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, is this Jessica?
It is. Is this the gecko?
This is the gecko. What's your life like, Jessica?
Oh my god. Oh, you know, just crashing down around me, but I'm surviving.
Is that true? Is it really crashing down around you?
Well, I guess it could always be worse. But, you know,
well, what is it that made you, like, gut say that it's crashing down around you?
Well, I don't know, just the way that my life has been the past, like, month or so. I was living with my grandparents, and then my grandparents kicked me out of my house, and I have a dog, so I had to find another for my dog, and then I had to move. And with my dad, I quit my job and everything. So, and now I live like 30, it's not that big of a deal, but it's like 30 minutes away from my boyfriend. And I just had to like uproot my life and everything. And that happened the last like month or so. So I'm just trying to figure out my life right now.
Why did your grandparents kick you out?
It's kind of complicated, but my grandparents are just, they're not the nicest people. And they were very mentally abusive towards me. So it was better for my mental health because I've lived with my grandparents since I was like 16, like on and off and everything like that. So I've just kind of been like, I've moved around a lot as a kid, but
So are you feeling...
I just never had a good relationship.
Are you feeling better now that you've moved out?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Okay, good. So I knew it was the right move, but yeah. It just sucks because I had to find a new home for my dog because my dad was allergic, so, and he couldn't live in his apartment. So,
oh, so you had to get the dog out.
It's not like I didn't have to give him up completely. Like, he's just temporarily staying at this lady's house until I can find another place to live, pretty much.
Well, it says here, Jessica, that a couple months ago you were diagnosed with herpes, and you would like to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened, like, in, like, August or so. And, like, previously I was, like, in a relationship with someone for, like, 2 years. And we, like, broke up, like, a couple months before August. And then I was just kind of, like, wanted to get out there again and everything. So I did what everyone does and downloaded, I think it was Tinder or Hinge, you know, one of those dating things that people do. But, so I was talking with this guy and, we hung out a couple times and he acted like he was totally into me and everything. And like, probably the fourth time into like hanging out with him, I was like, noticed that, you know, something was off down there. And then I went to, before I could even confront this guy, like out of the blue, he was just like, you know, like, I'm just like, I just can't have sex anymore. And I just thought that was the weirdest thing. It was even before I told him that like something was going on. Because it was before I got, like, tested officially. So, I don't know. But, yeah. And at first, I was just absolutely mortified with myself when I, like, went to, like, Planned Parenthood. And they tested me and everything. I was just like, oh, great. Like, this is just the cherry on top of my life. Because I also have, like, I have a kind of a rare condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So that kind of affects like your connective tissues. So the logistics is like the symptoms is like you feel like it's a chronic pain 24/7. And it's kind of similar to like rheumatoid arthritis. So on top of dealing with that every day, now I have herpes. And I was like, oh, fantastic. This is great.
So what's the deal with herpes? Yeah. Is it forever or is it like chlamydia where you just take a few pills and you're done?
Sadly, it's with you for your entire life.
Really? Every type of herpes, it's with you your entire life?
Well, yeah. So there's two different types of herpes. There's HSV-1, which is what like most people have. Like, I think I've read, like, one statistic where it's, like, 80% of, like, the population has oral herpes. And that's just, like, if you get, like, a cold sore. Like, I'm sure a lot of people have.
And
like,
is that one, the temporary one?
Well, it's kind of difficult to explain. But basically, with herpes, you can have, like, an outbreak and it can, like, come and go. Like, for me personally, like, my first outbreak that I had lasted for, like, 2.5 weeks. So, like, each time that you get an outbreak, it, like, gets lesser, like, each time. So, like, my first outbreak, it was...
Which one of these do you have?
I have HSV-2, so I have it generally.
Okay, second one.
Yeah.
And how often does that one break out?
Well, it was about once a month now, I would say. And I usually get it around, like, you know, my also weekly visit. So I think just, like, the hormones and stuff like that, everything kind of starts it, you know. Because it can also be triggered by, like, stress. You can get an outbreak from stress or, like, other like physical activity, sometimes you can get it like a trigger to that for an outbreak.
So now, so are you now everyone that you have sex with, is it sort of permanently transmissible?
It depends. So there's like all these different types of like statistics on like how much it's transferable and like if you use protection and then if you don't use protection. But I've only had like I'm in a relationship right now, and that's the first person that I have been with since I was diagnosed. And we've been dating since like mid-December, and he doesn't have any symptoms at all.
Really?
So it's very interesting. And like there's been, I know it's so it can be.
Wait, can I ask you? I want to ask you real quick before you continue. I want to ask you real quick. So when you, so it was before December that you were diagnosed mm-hmm. with herpes, and then you met this guy who is your boyfriend that you've been dating for about 5 months. And what was that conversation like before you guys had sex, where you had to be like, "Hey, so listen, I gotta tell you about this thing."
Yeah, so that's probably the hardest part, because like I hung out with him about 3 times, and just because like I wanted to feel it out first before like, because it was my first time ever telling like a male that I was like interested with, and that I sure. like, hey, by the way, I have herpes, you know?
Right.
So I wanted to like make sure like, I don't know, that he was like a good person, I guess. but yeah, so I basically, they call it like disclosing in the herpes world, but I disclosed to him community. Like, yeah, that's an actual thing. but yeah, I just texted him like the third day of us like hanging out or whatever, and I was just like, you know, like I enjoy like spending time with you, blah blah blah, I think this would be like something that, you know, what you say to if you like someone, stuff like that. And then I was like, you know, like a couple months ago I was diagnosed with herpes, and I told him what my frequency was and how my out like when I get outbreaks. And I told him like the percentage of like what's like transferable, and I sent him like this whole chart. On,
so you sent in you included visual aids.
Yeah, charts and yeah. graphs because like and... I don't know. Yeah, because like before I had herpes, I never knew anyone that had herpes, and I like
well
sure
so okay so you wrote all this stuff out for him, you send it to him, and how does he respond?
He had the most amazing response ever.
He what would he say?
Basically, he said I was worth it and that he appreciates me coming out and kind of saying like what was going on. And he basically said he wants to have like, you know, wants to have a future with me or see how it goes. And it doesn't really matter to him. And like, really? He obviously was like, you know, like, he said, like, keep me in check on like how everything's going. Like, let me know if you're having an outbreak and when it's done. And like, he was just trying to be like super supportive and everything like that.
Really? So it was so like, you can kind of find like, so basically you guys have like sort of windows where it's not breaking out, where you can safely have sex and he won't get it.
Well, it's still transferable. I think it's like something 10 to like, it was a wide range, but it was like 10 to 30% chance of transferring if you don't have an outbreak. And then I think it's like 75% if you're like during an outbreak. But
and how many times had you hung out with this guy before you told him?
I hung out with him 3 times.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is like a, you know, in a weird way, this functions as like a litmus test for you, you know? I mean, if you're the type of person who you're really seeking a long-term committed thing, this is a good litmus test for you, because it's like, you know, three meetings in, you hit him with that, and you're like, all right, let's see if he's in down for the count, you know, and you kind of get your answer there.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, it like I said, works as this litmus test to kind of prove who's in and who's out. And you clearly have found
exactly
somebody who is in.
Yeah.
So moving forward, you know, to kind of wrap this up, things seem to be going, and you've been with this guy for 5 months. You had a little bit of issues mm-hmm. with your living situation. You know, before we go, Jessica, what's kind of like the next step for you, do you think? Where can we see your adventures taking you, you know, in the coming weeks?
In the coming weeks, well, right now I'm unemployed, so I'm currently looking for a job, and I've been looking for a job since, like, I don't know, like mid-March, and I just got a job interview on Wednesday for this, as being, like, an administrative assistant at this doctor's office that does, therapy for kids that have autism. So I'll, hopefully that job interview, and I'll be around, positive people constantly. So,
well, Jessica, thank you for sharing that with us. Is there anything else that you want to say to the people of the computer before we go?
It gets better.
Sometimes. Hopefully.
Yeah.
That's the caveat. Yeah. Thank you for calling, Jessica.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a heavy thing to, like, have to, you know, I'm glad for her that, like, it sounded like she wasn't on a super, super long search before she found somebody who was cool with the herpes. I'm happy for her about that, because I don't know what I would do if I were in that situation, because she chooses, and I respect the strategy that she went with. She's like, okay, let me get three dates in, and then I'll bring it up. And I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if I would do that versus, like, I mean, maybe not the very first thing that comes out of my mouth, but, you know, opting to as soon as possible let it be known, because look, for some people that can be a big thing. But she opts to kind of do the slow burn, and I'm glad it worked for her, because that would have been kind of a crushing thing if she were to have invested all of that time, dropped the bomb, and then he was out. You know, and I mean, look, you know, no shame to anyone for, you know, any choices they make to do anything, but you know, I'm glad it worked out for her, especially considering all the other shit that's was going on in her life between the dog and the grandparents and everything. So at least she found someone who's cool with the herpes. I feel like that's, I don't know. I've never dated with herpes, but I assume that I feel like that's gotta be rare to find someone like that quickly who's cool with it. I feel like you would have to go through a lot of people before you found the one. So props to, good luck for her. That's good luck, I would say. That's a four leaf. I'm trying to, God, how do I end the sentence? It's a luck thing. It's a miracle from God. That's what I'll end this with. Thank you for sharing, Jessica.
Hey, folks, this episode is sponsored by Factor. Factor is a meal prep service that eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. I've been using Factor myself a ton this year to help me lose weight, and they make it easy by having the nutritional information of each meal listed right on the box, which is sometimes a bit harder to calculate when you're eating out. Every one of their meals comes to your door fresh, they're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I just had their chicken tikka masala for dinner tonight. I had their pesto salmon last night, and they were both very, very good. Head to factormeals.com/gecko50, and use the code GECKO50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code GECKO50 at factormeals.com/GECKO50 for 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hello?
Hello, Cole.
What's going on, man?
How's life, Cole?
It's a whirlwind, man. It's just, you know, good days, bad days.
Tell me, let's get into that. Tell me, let's start with the good days. What are the good days like?
I like to stay busy. I really like sitting around a whole lot, like to be on the go.
What are you busy with? What are you typically busy doing?
Right now, I'm just picking up extra shifts, making money, trying to distract myself.
Okay. So on a good day, you're keeping busy and you're distracting yourself.
Yes.
Okay. That sounds like that sounds like my good days as well. Is distracting myself with things and stuff until you sort of have to sit alone with your own whatever. Tell us what's going on the bad days.
I'm kind of finding myself in the middle of a pretty screwed up love triangle, and we're going on a little over 7 months now, and things have kind of gotten out of hand.
A love triangle, you say? Should I say what the screener said, or do you want to tell us in your own words about this love triangle?
You can say what the screener said. I'll get into it.
All right. Well, Cole, it says here, 25 years old from Pennsylvania. It says that you're dating a married woman. Is that accurate?
Yep, that's correct.
It says you started dating her even though you knew she was married. It says you don't have any guilt over the situation. And it says that your husband... It says that the husband knows about you. I have so many questions about every aspect of this, so let's kind of go one by one. How did you meet this person?
Met her on good old dating app, Tinder. Wasn't really looking for anything in particular at the time. Was just kind of doing me, and things just kind of happened. And the whole situation was she was actually looking for a friend with benefits, no strings attached, which I went along with, and things were fine for a period of time. And then we both kind of developed emotions, and things evolved pretty fast.
And at what stage in your sort of courtship did she tell you that she was married?
Actually, before we even met, I knew she was married.
How did you know that? Was it like on her profile or something?
No, actually in, I believe, our first conversation, because we talked for quite a while. She actually messaged me first, and I got back to her not too long after, and we had a pretty long conversation, our first talk, and she told me that she was married, had two children. And at this point in time, she gave me the impression that everything was fine and she was happy. But as I got to know her a little bit more, she got to know me, things started to slowly unfold, and she eventually revealed how unhappy she was and told me some things that any normal person in my mind, if we're done to them, they probably would have left, but she stayed. So
she was giving you this portrait of her marriage as pretty unhappy, and of her husband, it sounds, treating her poorly.
Pretty much. I mean, he's there. He's there for the kids. But he doesn't really do much. And I do think the guy's a narcissist at this point. I've kind of gathered enough information. obviously he hasn't been like formally diagnosed, but just off of stuff that she's told me, there's no doubt in my mind he's a narcissist. I think he's totally apathetic.
And okay, so to kind of dive into the second point, it says that you don't have any guilt over the situation. Is a lot of that lack of guilt because of all the things you know about this guy that she's married to and how they point to him being a narcissist?
Absolutely. And just knowing how he's treated her over the years. I mean, because there's a lot of stuff I could get into here, man. Basically, the whole reason she was even seeking anybody is because they established an open marriage due to him being unfaithful pretty early on in their marriage, actually while she was pregnant with their first child. So they kind of had a battle going on for a few years, were cheating on each other, and I guess eventually one day sat down and said, you know, what are we doing here? And they just, I guess, came to the conclusion they should stick it out while having intimate relationships with other people.
Okay, so back up real quick. So this is, 'cause that's important information. They're in an open marriage.
Yes.
Okay, then I wouldn't consider that cheating if they have formally, you know, communicated with one another that they're going to establish, you know, open up their marriage and have intimate relationships with other people. You know, if that's, you know, the bounds of their relationship discussed between the two of them, then that's not cheating.
Yeah, I wouldn't say she's, I don't know, it's debatable because I guess their whole agreement was mainly sexual, you know, strictly no strings attached, no feelings, which she had done for a few years successfully. She was good at not really having feelings, but she definitely, that switch was flipped with me and the feelings mutual. So now it's a full-blown love triangle. Like, it's not just sexual between her and I at this point. So
listen, I want to get into this. I want to get into this last part.
Yeah.
And this is sort of my questions about this have changed now that I know that it's an open relationship. Her husband knows about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you guys talked at all?
I believe 2 or 3 times over the phone. I have seen him face to face 1 time, not directly, but like I was there. I was actually driving away in my car with my quote unquote married girlfriend in the car with me, and he wasn't very happy about it. He was chasing me down the street.
He chased you down the street?
Oh, yeah, he was trying to throw hands right out in front of his house.
Why is... But so, if they have an open marriage, they've agreed that they can see other people, why is he then upset with you?
I guess because he feels like I'm taking away his personal servant. That's my best guess.
So how do you feel about this person that you're dating?
I have really strong, deep feelings for her, man. I mean, I seriously love her. I do. It's, you know, there's been many times now I've really considered leaving just for the sake of my own mental health. But it's just something about her, man. We're just drawn to each other. So I just can't find that energy, that motivation to just walk away as much as I want to. As much as the logical side of my brain wants me to do that, the emotional side just won't let me.
So you said that you want to walk away for the sake of your own mental health. So, I mean, are you saying that this relationship has been detrimental to your mental health? Because I can definitely ascertain as to why that might be.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it just comes down to jealousy, confusion, uncertainty. you know, just not knowing what's going to happen. I mean, there have been some developments, you know, throughout this 7-month ordeal. Neither of them are wearing their wedding ring anymore. They don't really sleep next to each other like they were. So she might be on her way out the door. But I mean, she's been with them. They've been married for 12 years. They have 2 children, 10 and 5. You know, so they have a lot of history together. So I know it's hard on her. I know she's like probably holding on to the memories and doesn't want to walk away. And I understand that, you know. I mean, I just got out of a 2-year relationship not long ago, and that was hard. So I can imagine 12 years would be tough, but it's just like, this guy's broken every cardinal relationship rule and she's stayed, you know. So that's probably what's toughest on my mental health is like jealousy, uncertainty, confusion.
Now the kids, have you met them before?
Yeah, I've met them like 3 times.
See, that is sort of an interesting aspect of this because, you know, especially when you're like, I feel like it's probably different for the 10-year-old than maybe the 5-year-old because, like, I don't know anything about fucking child psychology. I don't know what a 10-year-old would make of this whole situation, but a 5-year-old, it's like hard for them to know how to see you. Right?
Do you kind of
feel that from them?
Yeah, her 5-year-old daughter is, she's at that age, you know, she's like self-aware and she remembers stuff, but she's definitely that age where I don't think she'll really entirely know what's going on. Her 10-year-old son's actually very smart, really sweet kid, really polite. Like, she's instilled great values in these kids already, and they're really young. But like, with him being so smart, I think he definitely has an idea of what's going on. So, right. I mean, yeah, from their perspective, sure. I mean, I guess part of me feels bad. I mean, me personally, my parents split when I was 3. They got a divorce when I was really young. So it hits kind of close to home, but I wasn't as old as they are either. So I can't really tell you how that would affect them. You know, it was just kind of the norm for me because it happened so early on.
Hmm. And, you know, in your, I assume because you're telling me that, you know, you love this woman a lot and that I assume you see some form of a future with her and therefore some form of future where you're like in the lives of her children.
Absolutely.
Okay. From what you've heard. And by the way, this call, it's not gonna involve me in any way, shape, or form advising you on what to do in this situation because, you know, I don't really think that, and I don't even get the sense that you're wanting that from me, but I don't know if I can give that. But anyway, what do you sense of the relationship between these children and their father?
From what I've gathered, I mean, he doesn't do anything with them. Like, he's just there. And she's also said that many times. He's like a mindless zombie that just goes to work and comes home and does nothing. Like, she cooks, she cleans, she takes the kids out. Like, she keeps them active. He doesn't really do anything. He's not too involved with anyone, like her or their kids. Which is another thing that bothers me. It's like, I feel like he doesn't parent. He just expects her to do everything, you know?
Hmm. All right, I know I totally just said that I wouldn't give my input on the situation, but here are my thoughts. I can really see that you have, like, genuine, pure intentions for all these people. You know, for this woman and for her kids, and that you truly, like, care. Because you're clearly invested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can, like, hear it in your voice. You're clearly invested in the well-being of this woman and her kids, and you clearly are super empathetic for all the... you haven't told us about it, and I don't know if it's yours to tell versus hers to tell, but, you know, all the sort of shit that you've heard her husband do to her. And it's great that you have that empathy, and it's an important thing to have, you know, when you're developing a relationship with a person. But the problem, man, is that at the end of the day, at the end of the day, when the push comes to the shove, there is nothing that you can do to influence this woman's relationship with her husband. Like she has to be the one to say, okay, I've had enough of this, I'm leaving. And I don't know how, dude, I don't know how good it is for you to be like biting your nails, watching over, continuing to get more invested in her life until she makes that decision, because you can't make that decision for her. She has to make the decision on her own, and you can't just like sit there continuing to get more and more and more invested, waiting for her to leave. Even if you're doing all of this with like the purest, sweetest intentions, she has to pull that trigger, dude. And there's nothing you can really do. I mean, you can like, you know, tell her like, oh, he's wrong for you for these reasons and these reasons. And you can do all the best you can to let her know why you think this guy is a narcissist and why he's bad for her. And you can do it again from the purest place in your heart. But she has to come to all those realizations on her own at the end of the day, because you can't break them up for her. She has to do it on her own. And I hate hearing that you're standing by so heavily invested in this situation that you just have no fucking control over, because she has to be the one to break up with him at the end of the day. I mean, what do you think about that?
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. And that's a lot of the problem, too. I mean, I do have control issues to a point, and that's also hard on me, because you're right. I absolutely have like no control in this situation.
No control like, of the situation.
And what really sucks is like, she doesn't want me to leave. You know, she wants me to basically be sitting here idly by, because anytime I try and leave, like, she freaks the fuck out. Like,
dude,
doesn't want me to leave. And it's like, what do you want? You know, you just make up your mind, make a decision. And where she's at now, she keeps telling me she doesn't want to do it for me. She doesn't want me to be the reason, you know.
Dude. Again, I really, you know, I feel like you're coming at this with nice intentions, and you really care about this person as a fellow human being. And so I can tell why you're reacting very strongly to her, like, as you say, freaking out when you're talking about leaving. But, like, dude, this woman, I don't know her. I don't know anything about her relationship. I don't know anything at all about her relationship with you, her relationship with her kids, her relationship with her husband. But we do know that the only person that can make that decision of leaving her husband is her. So like, she's either gotta leave or stick it out. But like, to be, you know, holding you on the side, keeping invested, that's not fair to you, man. So,
I've
you know,
that too. No,
that's not fair to you, you know?
Yep.
Maybe I'll be the person to let you know that's not fair to you, and kind of, because you just said just now, you're telling that to her. So you know, you're aware that it's not fair to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, dude, it's not fair to you. I don't think that, you know, clearly you have good, as I'll keep saying, clearly it sounds to me like you have good intentions. You have empathy, you care about people. Fucking,
yeah.
Go use that somewhere where it can be better appreciated.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, it's the whole logic versus emotion, man. Because like I said, my logic absolutely tells me, it's the line that I walk every day, you know. And a lot of time the emotions prevail. I wish the logic would prevail more, because if it did, I mean, yeah, I would have removed myself from this situation probably like 5 months ago. Because, I mean, the longer we drag this out, it's just...
Oh, it's going to keep getting... Everything's going to just keep getting fucking worse, man. It's just going to keep getting worse.
Exactly. And it has, you know, her and I fight way too often over the same thing. We just rehash. And it's like, it's because nothing's changing, you know.
Dude.
Kind of stuck in a rut.
What's her name? Cole.
Yep.
Cole, listen, I know I'm a gecko man on the internet. You should never listen to anything that a guy in a gecko costume on the internet tells you to do. But you should really, really, really consider all the aspects of the situation and whether or not it makes sense for you to continue to be invested in this stuff. I don't even have to tell you this stuff. You already know this stuff. You already know everything
sure.
I would say to you.
Sure. Absolutely. I just figured you'd tell me I need to leave because any sensible, normal person, I've considered going to counseling and like laying it all out on the table for them. But, I already figured they're just going to tell me, you know, it's not good for your mental health. You should probably leave. That's the easy.
Okay, so you know it's not good for your mental health. You've asked me.
Yeah.
You're like having fantasies in your head of telling people the situation and them confirming it for you to leave. Again, I'm trying not to tell you what to do, but you have all the evidence that it sounds like you need to make your informed decision.
I would say so. Could just be denial, emotions, you know, hanging on. It's all uncertainty factor, you know, like maybe she'll leave, but I don't know, you know.
Cole, is there anything... Is there anything else you would like to say to the people at the computer before we go?
Never date a married woman.
I'd say that's good advice. Listen, if I can hammer in one final point, if I can just hammer in a final point before we conclude this conversation, it is that, again, I've said this three times, I'll say it a fourth. You're clearly a dude who has capacity for empathy for other people, which is great to have. That's a nice thing. Go fucking use that in a situation that is more welcoming to it than the one that you're currently in. That's the last thing I'll tell you.
All right, that's fair.
Cole, thank you for talking to a gecko on the phone.
Yep, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Take care, baby. Cole. I was thinking about what I was going to say in my post-call monologue, but I don't have anything to say that I didn't say during the call. I don't know anything about the situation with Here's the thing. Here's another thing. Is everything I told Cole, I probably would have told him. Okay, the factor of whether or not the wife's husband is a jerk to her, that doesn't even matter in Cole's decision making. Like, it shouldn't even be a factor. It's not, at least in my opinion, one of the key elements of the situation. Because the situation is Cole is invested in a person who he is waiting on to make a decision as to whether or not she wants to be with him, and he shouldn't wait on her. That whether or not the husband is a good guy to the wife, that's not even a factor. It's that Cole shouldn't be, you know, waiting on someone to pull a trigger or not as to whether or not he's going to be with them if he's getting that invested in them. So I hope Cole does whatever he feels best is to do for him, and I am very much a gecko on the computer.
Thank you. Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.